Hey, I'm Randall Thompson with Dugout Mugs. You are watching The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one.
Like, I guess we should be used to it, or I should. Like, I even have grocery bags to bring to the store, right? But I, and like, now that you can't get plastic bags, I show up, I forget, and then I have to pay 25 cents for the worst bag ever invented, the paper bag, and you need to carry it with two arms, or there's no handles, so it's like you've got two arms around it, like a lonely person with a body pillow. You're walking out of the grocery store and you're just like, hey, I should be alone, I guess. You know, like I should know, man, to bring a grocery bag. But I can't do it. Like, now that they've got this, you know, one-use plastic bags, you're not allowed anymore. But I'm going to tell you, Adam, I would always use them twice, right? To carry my groceries to my house. And then I would empty the groceries out. I'd put it in a garbage bag. In a garbage can, I mean, in the bathroom. Yep. And then I would fill it with all the garbage from either my groceries, you know, like the circle of life. And now the government of Canada has taken that away from me. Just nonstop, you know?
Tell me how you really feel, right? Scott.
Anyways, we should start the show, I guess.
All right.
You got me all riled up there.
Sorry about that.
Are we rolling?
Yeah, we're rolling. I hit record.
We're in. Okay.
Well into that.
Well,
yeah. I'm going to leave that in.
Yes. Welcome, everybody, to The Walk-Off. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Scott Belford, joined by my co-host and good buddy, Adam Mack. Buddy.
Hello.
Good week to be a Jays fan.
Yeah, I wish we could play the Braves every single series.
Man, we are 6-0. Won the season series against them. Swept them. Looking really good. They're 20-16, and the AL East is starting to shake out, isn't it?
It sure is. We're starting to see who's contenders and who's pretenders.
Both Boston, or I should say both Toronto and New York, are at 20-16. Boston's not as hot now that they're not playing Baltimore every second series.
Isn't that something to consider, hey?
Right? This is the thing, too. The Blue Jays have yet to play the Tigers. They've yet to play the Orioles, some of these bottom-feeding teams, which we're going to see a lot of them in July and August, which isn't a bad thing, right? All right, man, let's start with a few teases here. I did wish to bring up who our guest is today because it was a phenomenal chat with this man. We talked to Randall Thompson about a month ago. Now, he is the inventor, an entrepreneur behind Dugout Mugs. So this is it here. We've got ours, Walk-Off made, which is very cool that he made these for us.
Very cool.
He was also a professional ball player in the Toronto Blue Jays organization, and he talks some of his bus trips and stuff like that, and then he also gets into just the struggle of starting a business. It's a great interview, and we'll get about 30 minutes is where we should be around, I think. Of course, all of our guests are brought to you by yourrate.ca. Darren Brown is the mortgage broker who runs it, obviously a friend of the show. Darren has helped both my brothers and my dad with their mortgage. Interest rates are going up. There are still a few low-rate options available at yourrate.ca. It can all be done online, paperless, and COVID-safe. While we're talking guests, my man, I did want to tease who we chatted with last Tuesday. We're releasing the full interview of Sean Green, two-time All-Star, former Toronto Blue Jay. Of course, he had that massive year with the Jays in 1999 when he won the Silver Slugger, the Gold Glove, hit 42 home runs, 45 RBIs, 45 doubles, 123 RBIs. Just a ridiculous year. And Adam and I are both in our 30s, so chatting with him was
pretty cool.
A little bit of a fanboy experience, you know?
Yeah, all you teenagers who are growing up loving Bo Bichette right now, Sean Green was our Bo Bichette when we were younger.
He was our Bo Bichette, and our Vladdy was Carlos Delgado, and these were the two studs kind of coming up in the Blue Jays system at the time. And yeah, it was pretty darn cool. Again, that full interview we're going to be releasing Tuesday morning on our YouTube page. So the Walk Off Podcast. Please subscribe to that if you haven't, because then you're never going to miss one of these great interviews that we've wound up lining up. And then we're also going to air the entire interview on our radio show on 365 Sportscast Radio Network, 6 Eastern on Tuesday, which we run that show every Tuesday, 6 Eastern, right before our live stream that we do every Tuesday. Okay, so we're going to talk Blue Jays. We're going to get in to Kevin Biggio. He's been looking so much better. We're going to talk this front office. We're going to do an prospect update, and then we're also going to get into what the Houston Astros has done for their minor league system. All right, let's get into it, buddy.
Let's do it.
So 20-16, this Blue Jays team has looked good and bad at times, but they're really starting to shape around into form. One thing to keep in mind here, the Jays have used 12 starting pitchers in their first 36 games of this year. Think about that. 12 starting pitchers in the first 36 games. Man, the amount of starting pitchers that they used in 2016 when they went to the ALCS. Do you want to just take a guess?
In 2016. So that was
the whole year. The whole year.
Was that the year that we acquired Tulowitzki and Price, or was that the year after?
That was the year after.
Okay, I'm going to guess that we used the whole year?
In 162 games.
162 games. There's got to be injuries in there. There's got to be guys that didn't work out. I would say 10 to 15. I'd say 13. Let's say 13.
13? Yeah. 7.
And what 7. Are we at now?
We are at 12 in the first 36 games.
Okay, so that's a lot.
That is a lot, man. So this team has kind of been getting by the skin of their teeth.
We use 7 all year.
Isn't that insane?
That seems like a crazy stat. Best possible case scenario.
Totally the best possible case scenario.
That means
I think
everybody worked out and you had 2 injuries.
Yeah.
And then even the guys that you called up to cover. Yeah, our spot starts.
Wow. Like, it's crazy. We used up all of our pitching luck in 2016 is basically how that plays out.
Yeah.
But, again, you look at this team's record. You look at how they're heating up. You look at how the offense is starting to come together here. Marcus Semien has been fantastic over the last 15, 16 games. I think he's hitting over .350 in that time. Biggio is starting to put his game together. Like, we were texting back and forth yesterday during yesterday afternoon's game where they completed the sweep against Atlanta. And both of us were like, this looks like Kevin Biggio from last year. This looks like a guy who forces 3 full counts, takes 2 walks, and gets a very important double.
Yeah.
Kevin was phenomenal yesterday.
And he's figured out the strike zone. His hand is healthy.
And that's another thing, right? And we were talking about this with Arden Zwelling, and he mentioned that Kevin missed time in spring training because of a hand injury. And then he missed a couple games. Remember when he took that hot shot at third off his hand?
Yeah.
So maybe it's possible that it's just been like a nagging pinky injury, and he's refused to kind of go on the DL, but he can't really get his game together because, man, this series against Atlanta, he really did look good.
Yeah.
He's taking walks again. One little stat here. This is going to be a stat-heavy show. I got a bunch of fun little stats, but one stat about Kevin Biggio. He was an on-base percentage 3 weeks ago of .260, which is terrible because he normally averages around .360 to .370. On base percentage is one of his big advantages to him being in the lineup, right? He takes a lot of pitches and he takes a lot of walks. Well, he has got that on base percentage up to .330 now. So he's really climbing. You're just seeing how much better he's seeing the game or seeing the ball in the last 3 weeks. And last thing about yesterday's game before we kind of move on, because I do wish to do a prospect update here. Okay. You saw Vladdy imitating Romano at the end of the game? I know it's kind of gone viral.
Who hasn't seen it at this point? It's amazing.
It's so fun, man. Of course, we all are well aware of the Markham Madman, Jordan Romano, and his little deep squat he does before every pitch. Well, Vladdy, of course, having the fun that Vladdy has, he was just imitating him before every pitch while he was out there. And he did it like 10, 12 times, like every time Jordan threw a pitch.
Yeah.
Vladdy was there doing it. Very funny stuff. Entertaining.
Very good.
So, my man, I don't know if you saw or not, but the Baseball America put out their brand new top 100 prospects in baseball.
I have not seen this.
Seven Blue Jays are on that list.
Really?
Seven Blue Jays are on that list. So, Austin Martin, Nate Pearson, Jordan Groshen, Simeon Woods Richardson, Captain Kirk, Aroldis Martinez, and Alek Manoah have all broken the top 100. And what's hilarious is Gabriel Moreno is just on the outside of that and has been the hottest guy in Double A. Jordan, Gabriel Moreno has hit. Let me see if I can dig this up real quick here.
So 7 out of 100, and that's across 30 teams, right? So like on average, it should be like 3 to 3.5 prospects per team would be an even distribution. So we have basically double what the average should be. That's pretty impressive.
So Moreno is hitting 500 since the start of the Double A season.
Wow.
He has 3 home runs, an on-base percentage of 600, just under 600. And he's making all sorts of noise with his bat. And I guess he calls a good game. So that's very exciting. Alek Manoah is firing this year. He had that big opening day in Buffalo where he went 6 innings and struck out 10 or something like that. And everyone's 12. Like, comp.
Yeah.
12, right.
12 and 6.
Everyone's, so everyone's
two
like,
out, 2 out of 3 outs was a strikeout, which is unreal.
Just dominant. And everyone said, calm down. It's the first game of Triple A. Let's not go overboard here. So Ross.
Well, not everyone. Half the people were saying that. The other half were saying, get them up.
Yeah, exactly. Which has been kind of the two sides for the last 3 months. Yeah. And I know we've been on the side of calm down, right? We're starting to slowly move to the other side, though, because my goodness, Manoah's last start, Ross Atkins was in attendance. And this was after his opening day start of 12 strikeouts. He pitched a no-hitter into the sixth inning. He gave up one hit in 6.2 innings. Like, it's just insane. And as if that is not enough, Simeon Woods Richardson at Double A has also been just completely and totally dominant. So last time Woods Richardson pitched with the Fisher Cats, he struck out 8 over 5 innings, 2 walks, 1 hit, 1 run allowed, 78 pitches. So one last update on our prospects here before I get into this front office and what's going on with the prospects. So Josh Palacio, friend of the show, right. Josh Palacios, is unfortunately injured. It looks like he is going to miss the next 6 to 8 weeks, which is really too bad for the kid because he got his first sniff of the big leagues there when Springer was out and then Teoscar had to go on the COVID IL. He played very well. You know, had about a 280 average. He was doing everything the Blue Jays asked of him, laying down bunts, running the bases very well. So that's too bad for him. This Double A team is a really interesting little experiment going on in this system, man. And the Jays have already done this once. So we go back to 2018, and that's the new Fisher Hampshire Cat team.
The new Hampshire Fisher Cats. You do this all the time.
Man, I cannot get that. The new Hampshire Fisher Cats. I want to say Fisher first for some reason. Yeah. I should just say the Fisher Cats. So the Fisher Cats in 2018, they won the Double A championship. And that was with Bo Bichette. Kevin Biggio won Player of the Year. that year in 2018. That was with Vlad Guerrero, Nate Pearson. That was with Jordan Romano. Travis Bergen was on that team. And now look at who is driving this Blue Jays team currently. It's that core from the Fisher Cats. Well, Jays management is doing this all over again. You look at that Fisher Cats team, and they are trying to create a chemistry amongst them as they come up the system together, because right now you've got Austin Martin there, you've got Jordan Groshans, you have Simeon Woods Richardson there, you've got Gabriel Moreno, okay, you've got guys like Brody Rudning in the bullpen that could replicate Jordan Romano. You know, like, they have got a phenomenal core of prospects in New Hampshire, and they're going to be the next layer of this Jays team as things go on, which is very exciting, man. This is how you build a perennial contender
for sure.
Is they can go out and sign a George Springer for $150 million, and that is going to be recouped on the prospect end of things when they're paying Austin Martin $800,000 league minimum when he first comes up next year, right? So,
well, and they'll get to do that for a few years with him too. So
for a few years.
When he's winning a silver slugger for less than $1 million, you can afford to have a big money free agent.
So this is my question to you, my man. If Alek Manoah actually winds up in the next two starts continuing to dominate at AAA, and let's say the Jays actually, before everyone expected, bring him up at the beginning of June. Now follow me here.
Okay.
Let's say he works out. I'm not even saying is a superstar and dominates. I say he slides into that number three spot in this rotation and provides innings and breaks up the lefties. And now the Jays only need to go out at the trade deadline and get one stud pitcher. Simeon Woods Richardson all of a sudden slides in to the AAA rotation.
Okay.
Do we need to get on our hands and knees and say we are not worthy to this front office in Wayne's World style? You know, like, because if this is the case and they actually were able to evaluate the talent of this pitching core in the minors and didn't give up a bunch of prospects in this offseason despite the fan base yelling their face off, didn't go out and sign and use a bunch of money on a starting pitcher when this fan base was screaming their face off to do so, and a lot of pundits around baseball were questioning it. Like, if this actually works out, that they weren't just being cheap, not going to get a starting pitcher, but they were actually just creating room for a guy they figured could take that spot. And then we still have Nate Pearson in AAA being ready to be called up once he finds his game. Like, how much credit do we need to give this front office? Because at this point, I'm starting to buy into the fact that maybe we didn't need starting pitching. Like, am I going insane here?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it is a great young core. It's so exciting to think. Like, when we all were getting excited about Bo and Vladdy, and even Nate Pearson was kind of involved in that conversation. Like, we are pretty confident once those two are at AAA and Nate Pearson was in the system. Like, if Nate works out, because it looks like these two are going to be pretty rock solid for us, we're like, we might have a playoff window of like 6-7 years here.
Yeah.
And now, like, when you look at it and you're like, yeah, you got Martin, Groshans, Simeon Wood. I can't get his name right. What is it?
Simeon Woods Richardson.
New Fisher Hamter Cats.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh no, this window might be 10 to 12 years long.
Like, what this really sets them up to do is make a big offer to a Vladdy or a Bo, and if it's turned down, they've got guys pushing them coming up from the minors. And I'm not saying I'd like to see Bo Bichette walk in 2025, but it does allow the Jays to say, no, we're not going to pay you $360 million over 10 years.
It does give them a little leverage.
Yes.
It does give them a little leverage.
When we've got Austin Martin. And that's the thing. They're playing both those guys at shortstop still. They're still getting their shortstop reps with Groshans and Martin. Well, and yes, they're working them in center field and third base as well, but.
So Martin's 22, Groschans is 21. You also mentioned Orelvis Martinez is one of the top 100 prospects. Guess what position he plays? Shortstop.
Shortstop.
So, I mean, we are, I don't think all three of those guys make it to the Blue Jays.
No.
I think one of them is going to be a trade piece.
I agree. Probably one of them has to be. And I think if this team continues to come together like they are right now, that we could see the Jays go out and give up some actual prospect capital to bring in a Max Scherzer. Obviously, I'm just using that as an example. But to go out and get a stud pitcher for this playoff run.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Maybe these sort of conversations don't just apply to this year. I know we've talked about Chris Bryant as a trade rental, right? He's last year, his contract going into free agency. Whether or not they're ready to do that this year, it's the same sort of, like, there will be someone in a similar situation, short, like half a season left on their contract before free agency, that maybe when we are closer to being a contender is worth sending out one of those prospects to go and get that final piece that takes us from playoff berth to legitimate World Series contender. So it's a good problem to have, man. To have three amazing shortstops in the system.
It's wild.
One thing with Alek Manoah, I don't think he'll get called up before the late portion of June. I know there's basically two dates that are important when it comes to service time manipulation. One is like the third week of April. Mm-hmm. And that obviously extends the point at which free agency happens by a full season.
Right.
Right. The second date to be aware of is, I believe it's the third week of June, is the cutoff. It doesn't add a year to free agency, but it does add a pre-arbitration year. So instead of having a player for 3 years and then having to go to arbitration, you get him for 4 years before he goes to arbitration. So that can be the difference between $400,000 in salary and a few million. So if we're talking about like a 2 week, like, you know, start of June, he continues, you know, he's 6-0 and has an ERA under one, like, and it's just like, this guy needs to be up here. I just think it would be crazy to not wait two more weeks if it's going to save us $4 million 3 years from now. Like,
and this, I don't know. This front office is very concerned about stuff like that, so you make a very good point. I hadn't even thought of that.
Funny thing is, though, with the CBA negotiations coming up, this all might be a moot point. Like, that might be...
Which is very true.
Something that just gets wiped out.
And they may just look at this and go like, you know what? Let's roll the dice and bring them up.
Yeah.
Now, honestly, dude, 2 weeks ago, both you and I were like, there's no way Manoah comes up before late August. And even then, it's probably in a bullpen role. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to me how that opinion has changed. And it's changed right across the board for most pundits.
Yeah.
You know, like he just mowed through those AAA starts like a hot knife through butter. Like, it was just incredible. And we're talking strikeouts and we're talking swing and miss strikeouts.
So one other thing to mention with Alek Manoah is he did go the college route. Mm-hmm. He's not a 20-year-old.
No.
Right. He's not Simeon's Wood Richardson, who is 20. He's Nate Pearson's 24. Manoah's 23. So very, basically the same age. He also dominated in spring training.
He did.
So against, I know it's just spring training, hitters. But yeah, when he goes against the Yankees and he's mowing down Stanton and Judge, like, that's still a factor.
100%. And I'm kind of at the point where I'd like to see him in a big league uniform. I think that the worst case scenario is what they've just done to Pearson, which is he struggles out of the gate and he needs to go down and work on his game.
Yeah.
But if you know, like, there is a strong sentiment these days amongst pitching coaches that you don't want to waste bullets in the minor league. You know, like arms get injured.
Yeah.
And so why let Manoah blow through AAA hitters? Because you don't know when he's going to get injured.
No, that's a great point.
So it'll be really interesting to see what this Blue Jays front office decides to do with Alek Manoah. Exciting stuff for Blue Jays fans, especially when you look at this team that's 20-16, four games above 500.
The bats are starting to hit, man. Teoscar's figured it out. Cavan maybe's figured it out.
Game's coming together.
Danny Jansen
has figured it out big time. Jansen's looking better. Reese McGuire is in a black hole in that backup catcher role. Yeah, man. The offense is coming alive a little bit.
And I know we said it right off the top of the show. We haven't had an easy schedule, but we haven't had the same difficulty that the Red Sox and Yankees have had. Each of them have played the Orioles. I think the Red Sox have played them 10 times. Yeah, the Yankees have played them 7 times. Like, this is the worst team in the AL East. We've yet to play them.
Mm-hmm.
And we are still second in the AL East. I think we're a game and a half back of the Red Sox right now.
Mm-hmm.
So after we kind of split the series against Oakland, I was feeling a little bit bummed out because I didn't think Oakland was very good. I thought their record was a little bit inflated. I thought they got
hot.
They might
be for real.
Whatever. Yeah. They might be for real. I mean, they just took 2 out of 3 against the Red Sox, which helps us out.
Yes.
So, I mean, now that 2-2 split doesn't feel so bad.
Agreed. And you know what, man? When we are talking about the offense on this team, I know we have been touting this pitching all along, but the pitching has been pretty much mind-blowing. Like, here's a little stat about Robbie Ray. He has 33 strikeouts and 1 walk in his last 4 starts. And he led MLB with 45 walks in 2020 last year. You know, like, this feels fairly substantial.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a big improvement.
Yeah.
And Ray is locating his fastball. He's throwing faster than he has ever thrown in his entire major league career. He's 29 years old, and he looks like he has found whatever it was that was messing with his control, because he is locating pitches.
And let's say this, it's the middle of May. It's May 14th as we record this morning. We are quickly approaching the point at which we can no longer say it's still early.
We're almost at the 25% of the season.
Yeah, like, we are almost 2 months into the season. You know, another week or two, you know, that's 1 or 2 more starts for each of these guys, and you start to go, okay, maybe this is for real. You know, the sample size starts to get big enough, right? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling better and better about this Jays team, you know,
and
than I did 3 weeks
ago. Problems, I do too, man. I do too. And we said this on Tuesday. You know what would make me feel a lot better about this team? A 6-game win streak. And here we are with 3 wins in Atlanta. I'm not saying that they're going to sweep Philadelphia. I just mean putting some wins together does give you a little bit of confidence that this team is headed in the right direction. So let's do a quick little injury update here for everybody. Injuries to Hatch and Springer is something that Montoya touched on. And I've got it right here. So Thomas Hatch, elbow, is scheduled to throw 2 to 3 innings in a simulation game in Dunedin on this upcoming Thursday.
Okay.
Thomas Hatch, if he does it without any pain in his elbow, is on his way to returning to this team. He's a guy that they're going to build up as a starter. And he's probably going to get some innings in AAA, is my guess. He'll probably get some rehab starts there. But I think this is a guy that also we could be on the look for him come mid-June-ish.
That gets you excited?
I really thought Thomas Hatch had a phenomenal year last year.
You almost said yesteryear.
Yeah, yesteryear.
You're so fancy.
Yeah. Yeah, yesteryear with the new Fisher Hampshire Cats.
And Simeon's Richardson Wood. All right, let's leave that. You go ahead.
I like Thomas Hatch. I think he could be a very good starting pitcher. If he doesn't, he profiles as a fantastic bullpen arm. I know he did that last year and was a godsend out of that bullpen. So, yeah, I'm excited to have Thomas Hatch back. Is he the answer in this starting rotation? I would be surprised, but he may be. So it would be nice to get him back. George Springer, his quad continues to take his quad is still an issue, but he continues to take batting practice. And he has started running. Actually, last night, I think he was running. So, again, they're not going to rush Springer back by any means. And as this offense heats up, there's no need to do so. But my goodness, when he returns, having that bat at the top of that order, wow. It's nice to dream about.
Hot take, but I'm tempted to say we're going to see Alek Manoah before we see George Springer.
Interesting.
Not quite ready to say that yet,
yeah,
but
I know I don't like hearing that, but you may be right. Rafael Dolis is expected to throw a bullpen session today. He, of course, instrumental part of this bullpen, and hopefully he's not going to miss much time. Hopefully they don't even need to worry about building his arm back up, that this is just a little bit of rest, and he can come back and step into the back end of this bullpen, because he was phenomenal. He was just a godsend again. Like, I keep using that term, but there's just guys who have really picked up the reins during these injuries, and he was one of those guys. So it would be nice to get him back in the bullpen. Prospect Patrick Murphy, who just seems to be constantly injured, threw 18 pitches on Tuesday and is expected to throw another bullpen session later in the week as his shoulder rehab continues. Anthony Castro is expected to throw a bullpen session this weekend. Of course, he has tightness in his forearm. He was another guy who was very instrumental in the bullpen when all the injuries happened, and then he got injured himself. So there's where we're at on our injury front. Man, just going through it all, it's like, oh, I forgot how many people are injured on this team.
I know, it's wild.
Did you have anything else to add Blue Jays wise before we move on?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Okay. Yeah,
Kevin Biggio, I know you had mentioned a trade idea that I did not like at all.
Okay, I love that. Okay, so this is a hypothetical, I like that we're doing this, hypothetical scenario, and this one was tossed around Blue Jays Twitter a bunch over the last few days. So for all of you out there listening, and for you, Adam.
Yes.
Kevin Biggio, would you trade straight across for Chris Bryant?
I hate that I'm even considering it, but I don't think I would.
No, I don't think I would either. And there's a lot of people out there who think we're absolutely insane for not doing it, but my goodness, I mean, what terrible asset management that would be to make that trade. Yeah. Basically, what people are saying is they would rather 3 months of Chris Bryant over 4 years of Kevin Biggio. I don't even see how that's a question. Like, I personally...
Well, I mean, there's no guarantee that it's just 3 months of Chris Bryant. Like, if
that's
it's...
True.
It would be 3 months of Chris Bryant with a serious effort to sign him long-term, a la Francisco Lindor.
Yes.
Right? When the Mets traded for Lindor... It was the same situation, right? Mm-hmm. The intention was we sign him long-term, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
If that's... I mean, as a pure rental, I hate it 100%. Yeah. If we're going to get him for 3-4 years, like, to kind of line up
maybe
with
the
George Springer contract, then, I mean, then we have a consideration, but... I really have to think about where everybody fits in the lineup from there. I don't know. I don't like it, though. At face value, it puts a weird taste
in my mouth.
No, I
don't really like it either. But it's an interesting little hypothetical.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the MLB.
The last thing we wish to touch on before we throw to Randall Thompson, our guest for today, is the fact that the Houston Astros, for a change, are doing something that they should be commended for.
Yes.
They are going to be providing furnished housing for all of their minor league affiliates. all four of them, right? From the Gulf Coast League and low A all the way up to triple A, which is such a huge step forward for these minor league ball players. These are guys that you need to remember are making their living off of baseball, and it is a terrible living, especially in A and double A.
Yeah.
And especially if you don't get a sniff of the majors. Like, there's some triple A guys that are doing all right because they've been called up once, and as soon as that happens, you start to make a little bit of money. They call it having your cup of coffee, right?
Right.
So as soon as you have your cup of coffee in the big leagues, you're making a little bit more money. But man, I know every minor league guy we have talked to, some of their biggest concerns has been lodging, finding a place, living with two or three roommates, right? Mm-hmm. Two or three guys on the team, because you're making $1,500 a month. So you're trying to keep your costs as low as possible and eliminating that. And this is the thing too. I guarantee when it comes to these Houston teams, it's not like it's costing the Astros a ton of money. In fact, if anything, it's probably real estate investment. Like, you know, like they're probably buying some apartment buildings that are just going to gain value. And why this has been something that no other team has done yet is beyond me. However, what a huge step forward. And it's like when the Blue Jays came out in 2000, when was it that they gave all of their minor leaguers a 50% increase? Do you remember?
I don't remember that.
It doesn't matter. But the year, as soon as the Jays did that, dozens of teams across the league followed suit. Yeah. And I think we're going to see the exact same thing here in minor league ball with a lot of these organizations. They're going to follow the Astros' footprint and provide furnished apartments for their players, which...
Well, it just makes sense from a standpoint of, like, I want my prospects to pan out.
Yes!
Like, why would I want my... If I've got Austin Martin or I've got whoever my prospect is that, like, I would love to one day have them be good enough to help us win a World Series, why would I want them to be eating Kraft dinner and Mr. Noodles?
Yes! Like, why would I wish them stressing about making rent?
Yeah, especially like you said, if you're just buying a couple apartment buildings that, like, worst case scenario, real estate just goes up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see the downside to it. I don't know why this hasn't happened before.
Hasn't happened before. It's actually kind of insane.
Yeah.
And you know what? Baseball, I mean, let's face it, sports in general, there's such a huge mental aspect to the game, right? So if you can take some of these concerns off these players' plates so that they're only worried about baseball, which there's still plenty to concern yourself with there, you know, it's such a huge thing to do for these players. And I think it gives Houston a little bit of an advantage right now, too, until other teams follow suit, because, of course, minor leaguers are going to be like, my goodness, if I don't need to worry about the $600 a month rent, it's going to be like a huge, it's going to be like a 20% to a 50% pay increase.
Yeah. Well, and then another layer of, like, why this benefits the team. And I'm just saying this so that, like, more teams follow suit, because I know a lot of GMs and owners listen to this podcast. But, like, just in terms of, like, keeping your guys out of trouble,
you know, I mean, where they are.
Not every organization has that problem. I know we've joked about this before with the Blue Jays. You know, every prospect we've talked to is like, yeah, how about Friday night? I'm free Friday night. Because they aren't going out partying, right? They're talking ball. But, like, yeah, nobody's going to be getting into any sort of shenanigans when their home base is, like, under company eye, right? Like,
exactly.
Like, exactly. Oh, yeah, did you see the third baseman got home at 4 a.m. last night? Like, I don't know. It's just, yeah.
It's encouraging, man. I know we've talked.
It's a step in the right direction.
We've talked to so many of these guys in the Jays system, and your heart feels for them, man, when they're stressing about, you know, talking about pooling their money so that they can go out for wings.
Yeah.
We each get three wings. Like, it's crazy, but it's really good to see Houston stepping up and doing so, and I really hope the Jays follow suit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Honestly, always appreciate it. This walk-off community that we are slowly building is just very exciting and very cool. Yes. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel if you get a chance. It's a very helpful tool for us even to just get better guests, you know, which we are going to be airing the Sean Green interview again on Tuesday. You can keep your eye out for that. Walk Off Podcast, at Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, the Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. And of course, we run our radio show on 365 Sportscast Radio Network every single Tuesday at 6 Eastern Time. Again, everybody, thank you so much for listening. All the best, and we'll see you on Tuesday.
Go Jays, go.
Runner goes, trying to steal third, and that one is belted to left center field, and that baby's gone.
Hey, I'm Randall Thompson with Dugout Mugs. You are watching The Walk Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
All right. So excited to be joined today by former professional baseball player with the Toronto Blue Jays organization and one of the founders of Dugout Mugs, Randall Thompson. Welcome to The Walk Off, man. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
That's a heck of a light fixture you have behind you there.
I bought a home in November and it came with the house.
It came with the house. You're new to the place. Congrats. That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Where are you at right now?
We bought a home in Bartow, Florida. Probably nobody's ever heard of it ever before, but not very much.
You're a Florida boy, right?
I am. Yeah. Born and raised Florida.
That's where you started playing, obviously, too. I'm curious what the sense is around Florida when spring training hits. Do all the kids get excited with all the pros coming in there? Like, was it something you looked forward to as a kid?
No doubt. Yeah, I grew up in Orlando, Florida, and that's where the Braves used to spring train. And most definitely, every time March would roll around, grew up a huge Chipper Jones fan, and just running out on that grassy knoll out at the Disney Worldwide of Sports Complex. And yeah, just have a ton of memories of spring training. And then also high A ball, the Florida State League. There was a field not too far from the house that I grew up in. So yeah, I got a whole bunch of memories of professional baseball being in Florida. And in general, the kids are growing up with all these kids and going to see this stuff. It was definitely a thing to do in Florida.
Oh, that's cool. I can imagine there being excitement. I know, like, when I was a kid, I loved spring training, and I'm about as far away from it as possible. So yeah. Are you a Magic fan too, being from Orlando? Man, are they tearing down.
Yeah, I grew up a Magic fan because I grew up near downtown Orlando, and that's where I think it was the Amalie Arena. But that's when Shaq and Penny Hardaway, yeah, and just kind of this really, really good team.
Oh, iconic. Absolutely.
They were sick. But now, no, I don't really follow the NBA. I don't really follow the NFL.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You still keep track of baseball, obviously?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I hated it for a while after I got released, and I kind of like said, I'm never going to watch it ever again. But with enough time, you start to realize that
it wasn't personal. Yeah. All right. Well, let's rewind to exactly that then. Tell us about 2011, because that was the year that you got to do something that almost none of us get to do, which is you got to play professional baseball for a year, man, suiting up with the Gulf Coast Blue Jays. How did that experience come to be? Kind of walk us through that process of getting signed and mm-hmm. being assigned to the team.
Yeah. So going into my junior year of college, I had a pretty good chance of getting drafted. I strung together some good years in college, and then I played some summer ball in the Coastal Plain League and did well. I was optimistic of getting drafted going into my junior season, and I kind of just shit the bed. Always dreamt of playing professionally. And, I think just tossing and turning at night, just kind of being able to taste it a little bit, thinking that I was actually going to get that shot. I overthought it. And then anytime you're overthinking anything in baseball, it doesn't usually yield great results.
Yeah.
So then after my senior season, I ended up getting signed, and I kind of was just sitting around my parents' house after finishing my last classes of my senior year and kind of going back to my house, and my season ending, I thought like I was going to get drafted, didn't get drafted. And I always thought that there was going to be like trumpets playing whenever I signed and like a parade coming down the road. And it was nothing like that. I just got a call from one of my assistant coaches at Florida Tech, which is a small D2 school over in Melbourne, Florida. And he said, "Hey, you're getting ready to get a call from Matt O'Brien. He wants to sign you." And I said, "Okay." And so flip phone and everything, Matt O'Brien calls me, and that's a scout for the Blue Jays in the area that I'm from. And he said, "Hey, do you want a job?" And I was like, "Oh yeah." And he's like, "Okay, pack up, you'll report to Dunedin tomorrow morning." I said, "All right, cool." And then that was, you know, that was it. And I thought, trumpets. Yeah, no trumpets, man. I mean, I even went inside and told my dad, and he's like, "I'll believe it when I see it." I was like, "All right, well, I guess nobody really cares here. I've been working my whole life towards this, but sure." Yeah, that's how it happened. And I got to Dunedin, and they kind of just told me I was going to stick around there, and I just ate up a little bit of innings for them, and yeah, that was pretty much my career.
That's very cool. What was that season like? Did you enjoy your time there? Like, what was a typical day? Was there a ton of travel? Was it just...
No, I mean, I was 22 and kind of naive. I look back on it now and I say to myself, like in the moment, I didn't like it at all. I loved college baseball. Professional baseball was just a whole nother breed. The best way I've ever heard it put, and it's so true, is that your whole entire life, you use the game of baseball to better yourself. And then when you get to professional baseball uses you to better itself. And that's an incredibly difficult pill to swallow. And when you get there, again, you think it's going to be some sort of lifestyle, and it's nothing like that lifestyle. It's living in a hotel and kind of just being really bored, to be honest. You got a lot of free time.
Just a lot of waiting for games, eh?
Yeah, a lot of sitting around, and I'm like, man, this sucks. And I look back on it now, and I wish I didn't have that mentality. Because what other job can you get into and give like a hard 4 years, and the upside is a minimum $600,000, and you get to play baseball for a living?
Yeah,
there's no other like formula that leads to that other than where I was sitting at the time. But I didn't take that approach. I was kind of an asshole, not to my teammates, but just in general, just my overall approach to the whole thing. I said, you know, I worked this hard to get here, and I don't even really want to be here, which is kind of dumb, but you know, you live and you learn.
Well, no, it's funny because you kind of brought this up earlier about the mental side of the game and what a big piece it is, right? And I can imagine, I mean, even in your first year, you pitched well, you were under a 3 ERA in 47 innings. Like, that's not too shabby. What was the mental process like that going in the next year into spring training and then being cut? Like, you kind of touched on it that you just didn't like the game for a while.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask my teammates, I probably got released because of a freestyle rap I did on a bus.
He's like, "You do not need to hear it."
So in that boredom of things, one of my teammates had a MacBook, and it was something that I enjoyed doing in the free time, the lots of free time that we had, is that I would create music on like GarageBand, and I came up with a song about the Gulf Coast League. And the Gulf Coast League is just a really shitty league altogether. You play at noon in the Florida sun, and you know, it kind of sucks. Like, listening to myself now, it kind of like, dude, there's people that will cut off a toe to go. So I realized that, but it's like, put another quarter in the merry-go-round. It's just not a great taste of professional baseball. And so I wrote a song about the Gulf Coast League and just pretty much how much it sucked. And we went on this bus trip to watch the big league club Blue Jays play against the Rays over in St. Pete. So we had like a 45-minute bus trip, and people were doing like funny stuff on the mic and with the bus. And then one of my buddies like nudged me and said, "Hey, perform the GCL song." And I was like, "All right." And so it pretty much just like shit on the Blue Jays ish and the Gulf Coast League. And probably like 2 or 3 days later, this was an extended spring training. 2 or 3 days later, they gave me the boot. So I have to say, like, I wasn't doing horribly. And I was the only one that got released that day. So I have to assume that like word got around that I talked some shit and they said, "See you, buddy."
They're like, we don't need this kind of honesty.
Yeah, it's toxic.
So where did you go from there? Were you trying to get looking into independent leagues or trying to catch on elsewhere? Or did you just decide going to hang it up for a bit? I know you did eventually get into coaching. Was that something you wanted to do instantly, or how did this play out?
No, it wasn't. So I got released and I was sour. I got a couple independent ball opportunities and I said, "No, I'm done with baseball." And so I went and got a job at a paint store, and I was working at a paint store, and I was like, "Well, this is even worse than the Gulf Coast League." So I said,
"Yeah, what, did you get let go because of a rap song about the paint store?"
No, there's no trend like that. But yeah, so I hit up my old coaches at Florida Tech and I said, "Hey guys, I need to get back in baseball in some capacity. Can I come back over that way and coach?" And they said, "Sure." And so that's when I went back to Florida Tech. And then that was eventually coaching there. That first year coaching there was eventually the place of for the idea of the dugout mug.
That's great, man. I'm curious about your time as a pitching coach a little bit, because it's funny, we've got a friend of the show here, Anthony Telford. He played with the Expos back in the day, and he's a pitching coach right now for some of the young guys around Florida. And he always mentioned that it's weird as a pitching coach being able to see other people's flaws and pick out what other people are doing, but yet you could pitch as a pitcher and just be off of how you're throwing, your technique, whatever it is, and just never pick it up on your own. Did mm-hmm. you kind of find the same thing?
No, I usually the ones that are more talented are the ones that have a harder time feeling what they're actually doing. So like this guy that you're referencing, he was probably really naturally talented, not saying he didn't work hard, but
yeah,
he probably was a really talented dude kind of quite naturally, to where I grew up, where I really loved the game, but I was always kind of like a step or two behind, everybody else. So I wasn't in this kind of constant, like, I got to feel what I'm doing. I got to kind of learn more about the game to kind of get an edge to kind of even stick around. So my struggles, I guess my struggles from like, let's just call it travel ball era until probably about my senior year in high school, kind of helped me feel the game and understand the game better than most people. I never really had any troubles feeling what was going wrong. I kind of got a better feel than most because of that struggle in the beginning of my career.
Speaking of your career, it's funny, Randall. Like, one of the things as we kind of looked into you here that impressed me about your career is you just always kind of found a way to stay involved in baseball in one way or another. Tell me about dugout mugs. Number one, super cool. And for those listening who don't know, it's basically mugs made out of baseball bats. How did this idea come to you? And what did you do to kind of start making it a reality?
Yeah. So you saying that, my pitching coach in college, his name was Lee Stang. He pitched for the Red Sox in the 60s, and then he coached in the big leagues, and he kind of roving guy. He was around baseball his whole entire life. And I remember, I think it was either my junior or senior season in college, of him telling me like, he's done this, he's done this. And pretty much he was, at that time, I think he was like 66 or so. And he was in our dugout and he was just volunteering to be our pitching coach. And I thought it was really, really neat that he never left the game of baseball. He kind of, his whole entire life was baseball. And I kind of, I looked at that and I said, man, I would love to emulate that in some way, because deep down, I do love baseball. And the thought of sticking around it in a bunch of different ways, or even the way that I am right now, It's so ideal for me. But yeah, the dugout mug came from sitting in that same dugout that I was just telling you about with Stanger, and the recruiting coordinator / hitting coach at Florida Tech was cutting baseball bats in half and creating a training tool. And so a bunch of loose baseball bat barrels were lying around in the dugout, and examining them and looking at them, I thought to myself, you know, there's that natural cup to the bat. I said, if that cup just kept going down, could you turn this into a pretty cool beer mug? And that's where the whole initial thought started.
That's great, man. I know it's interesting. We chatted with the founder of Prairie Stick. So they're a bat manufacturer here in Alberta, Canada. Mm-hmm. And when the guy started the company, it was really interesting to me. He knew literally absolutely nothing about the manufacturing of bats. He was a ball player and he just liked the idea of it. He said it was like a romantic idea. He didn't even know what like a wood lathe was. How much did you know about the manufacturing of bats and that sort of thing before you got into this, and how much trial and error was involved?
Absolutely. Yeah. A ton of trial and error and absolutely nothing about, about anything. I have journals. I like to keep notes in journals, and I have journals of like wood lathe ? And I'm why? it's so simple. When you look at it back now, like what I was trying to do, it's so simple to me now, but the thought of like, I needed a wood turner, like, and I spent a year trying to pursue, just like trying to figure out, well, how do I get a hole in this? And I can't believe I asked like that many wrong questions to never eventually like something just leading me to a wood turner. But it's so obvious now. I knew nothing. And when I'm being in business now for coming up on 5 years, and then a year before that, kind of just pursuing everything. So 6 years of pursuing a product and building a business, what I've learned is the best talented people are the ones that can Google the best. People come to me and they're like, hey, how do I do this? And I'm like, I don't know. Give me 5 minutes. I'm just going to Google it. And, and that's really, I mean, just knowing how to ask the right questions, whether it's to the right people, because there are people that have a certain expertise, or even just going to Google and typing something in, just asking those right questions can lead to a whole lot of success.
That's really interesting that you're so right in the fact that all the information in the world is available to us. Mm-hmm. It's finding it. Yeah. How long did it take you to figure out the right questions to ask?
So I had this idea in 2014. I didn't actually start pursuing it until 2015. I left coaching to take a internship at an ad agency, because I had this real itch to be creative. And, so I was an intern at this ad agency during the day. And then I was working at this restaurant called El Gallo Grande, the big cock. And I was a waiter there. And like within the same week, I came to this realization that like this ad agency wasn't going to be what I wanted to do, or it was just kind of shitty. And there's kind of like this trend that now that I'm realizing that maybe it wasn't all these things that were shitty. Maybe I was just shitty. and I got fired, from the big cock taco place, all within like the same week. And at this time I was living in my sister. She took our garage and converted it into a studio apartment. And I was back there and just kind of had no job, no real direction, and kind of just in a moment of like, okay, what the hell am I going to do? I reached in my back pocket and I have tons of ideas, and I thought to myself, probably the most simplistic idea I have, the one that seems like it's the most doable, is putting a hole in a bat barrel and turning it into a mug. And so I went to my back pocket in kind of a desperate time and said, I'm gonna give this a shot. And that was in 2015. And then by 2016, I launched the company.
That's great about... So I'm a professional comedian. I've been making a living at it for 4 years. Been doing it for 12. So it took me like 8 years of either working part-time or even just working full-time and then developing an act to get to the point where I could actually make money at it. And I know deciding to go full-time is such a big thing, just mentally, right? Like to take that plunge and do that. But I found when I did it, I made a lot of progress because all of a sudden I wasn't dividing up my time. When you took that plunge in 2016 and decided, okay, we're going to go all in on Dugout Mugs, how did you deal with the mental hurdles, and where did you notice an increase in productivity?
Yeah. So I started Dugout Mugs in the middle of 2016. And I was working at a paint store again, full time in 2016. So there was a 6 month window where I was running parallel with running Dugout Mugs and working at this paint store. And it was legitimately the hardest 6 months of my life.
It's exhausting, right? You're burning the candle at both ends.
It was really, really, I hate saying things are tough, because that's always a position of it's subjective. Mm-hmm. There's a lot tougher things going on in this world, but I look back on those times and I was rough in it. So those ran parallel for about 6 months. And then, same thing, kind of came to a crossroads where I asked myself the question, am I not doing this full time because I'm not doing it full time? And I know that kind of sounds like a strange question, but it's just, that's the reality of things.
If
I put my full time effort into this, could I be doing it full time? And it's not like when I say it, it sounds dumb, but it's the ultimate question that I got to. And I said, all right, well, a couple of things happened. One, I ended up partnering up with Chris, who's my business partner now, and he has experience. He had a ton of experience in selling things online. So that first 6 months of business, I did about $70,000 in sales. And after I did that in sales, I was constantly looking to pick people's minds and try to figure out how to scale it up bigger. And I came across Chris online. And I sent him a Facebook message and I said, hey, I'm just trying to learn more about Facebook ads. Could we link up? This is my company. And I just sent him the link. And we ended up meeting in a hotel lobby in St. Pete and drank a beer and kind of just talked for 20 minutes. And then that eventually led to a string of emails that eventually just us working together in probably about January, February of 2017. So the very last and here is, I was getting a bonus in February, like February 2nd of 2017 from this paint store. And I wanted to take that bonus and I wanted to roll it back into Dugout Mugs.
Right.
So it's like, okay, I proved a little bit of a concept. I have a business partner that has done this before. I kind of believe this is going to work. I'm still incredibly nervous about it, and I'm getting a nice little bonus to give me even a little more of a runway to get this up and going. And the combination of all those things eventually had me take the leap into doing it full time.
Well, it is interesting when it comes to passion projects, how many of them fail for exactly the reason that you just brought up. If you're not putting everything you got into some of this stuff, it's almost impossible to push it across the finish line. For and sure. Having the, because it's hard not to be trepidatious. I mean, everyone's still got to make a living, right? Like you still got to put food on the table and pay your bills and stuff. And sometimes if you're looking at the bottom line of your passion, you're like, I don't know if we can pull that off. But big congrats on doing it, man. Like that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. What I truly believe is that the only way you're ever going to, and I can only speak from the vantage point or the seat that I sit in from an entrepreneurship standpoint, but I'm sure you can relate with this from a comedic standpoint, is that the only way that it's ever going to happen is if you really, really, really want to do it. Like, if you love it and you want to do it, that's the only way it's ever going to happen. There's going to be so many scenarios and situations and opportunities for you to just say F it. Like, I don't want to do this. this is too hard, or I would rather whatever, insert anything else. But you just got to really want to do it. And you got to have a little bit of a vision of what your life is going to look like when you're doing it. And I think if you can hold on to that, I think for the most part, you can accomplish whatever you want to accomplish, but you just got to really want to do it. So I'm married now. I was with who's now my wife, when this was all like, when one of our first dates, I had an old Tahoe and I had a bunch of baseball bats in the back, and I got just like these craft bats from a company. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to turn these into mugs. I was driving a paint delivery van when we met, and she's a teacher. And a lot of times she would just, we'd go out and we would booze and kind of just drink at the bar, and she'd pick up the tab. So she kind of either thought I was really hot, or she saw the vision. Maybe a combination of both. I did kind of live like a, I didn't have a lot of money, but I did live, and I still do live frugally. I just, I ate rice cakes and peanut butter for almost a year for lunch, and kind of just put everything back into the business and just to make it happen and make it work.
It's sacrifice. It is sacrifice. It's just like, for the goal in the end. I know you had just a pretty major order from your former organization, the Toronto Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. Love to hear that, how that whole thing played out.
Yeah. That order came in at the end of 2017. And so the way that it shook out was, when I first signed, in 2011, there was a website called jaysprospects.com, and I got a message on Facebook that said, "Hey, congrats on signing. Would you mind doing an interview?" And it was with somebody by the name of April Witzman. And I said, "Yeah, sure." And we kind of did this whole write up thing. And over the years, April and I just kind of kept in contact, and she knew about Dugout Mugs. And then fast forward to 2017, she's working for the Toronto Blue Jays, and I'm just maybe first full year into Dugout Mugs. And I got another Facebook message, and it was from April. And she said, "Hey, the Blue Jays are looking for season ticket member gifts. I thought maybe your product would be a good product for that." I said, "Okay, yeah, that's definitely something that we'd want to do." She said, send me a sample, and then also write up, like a letter with your company letterhead, and I'll hand it to the right person and make sure that they get it. And so, long story longer, they get it, and, a little bit of back and forth and a little bit of an exchange with the buyer. And she ends up saying, "Okay, yeah, let's do it." And they ended up putting a purchase order in for, I think it was 3,500 mugs or so.
Maybe, oh, wow.
4,100.
Was that your biggest order at that point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. at that time, we had like 2.5 laser engravers. There was one laser that decided to work sometimes and sometimes not. And then we had just two others. And, it was one of those things that, we took the order. We never shipped anything to Canada, especially of that size. So then we thought, oh, do we need a broker? It was all these things that kind of just said yes, because you don't want to not take the sale. It was the amount of units that we sold was more than double what we sold all in 2016. So yeah. And so we're just like, oh, we can't say no to this. So we just figured it out. But yeah, it was a pretty cool full circle moment of being able to sell that amount of mugs to the Toronto Blue Jays.
Right. Turns out you didn't burn that bridge as bad as you thought you did with that wrap.
Yeah, it's different departments. So like if you would have asked the Red Wing pitching instructor if they should order the mugs, he probably would have said no. But,
out of curiosity, what team sells the best for you? Are you just moving Yankee stuff more than everything else, or is it pretty even across the board?
Yeah, so majority of our sales are online. We sell a lot of Cubs stuff. We sell a lot of Yankee stuff. The Dodgers, when they won the World Series, we sold a whole lot of Dodger stuff. But as far as we work with all the team stores within the MLB stadiums as well. One of the biggest supporters is the Cardinals. Ashley buys a whole lot of stuff from us, and so does the Braves. The Braves buy a whole lot of stuff as well. So those would be our two biggest supporters from like a MLB team store purchasing side of things.
Can you actually drink out of them on a regular basis, or is it more like, is it more just functional and ornamental, or can you just go to town on it? Like,
yeah, I definitely could drink from it. You could drink from it every day. I see it more as like a game day mug and like, yeah, a big game, kind of take it out and drink from it. Somebody recently said that like they put water in it on their bedside and like they wake up and drink from it. And I'm just like, I don't know if that's really the, but heck, I don't really care how people use it. If that's the way they want to go about it, sure. But yeah, I see it. You can definitely drink from it every day. But I just see it more as like kind of a rally mug, so to speak, or just like a World Series, 7-game World Series, kind of bring it out and drink from it.
When it's all on the line, you bring out your dugout mug. Yeah. I know you did touch on the online side of things. How big is that to you? Pretty much everything, I'm guessing.
Pretty much everything. When I started the company, that's kind of just how I saw things selling. And now once the pandemic hit, thank goodness we were structured the way that we were. Because something I told Chris, my business partner, is like, it would suck so bad if we took the past 4 years or the last 4 years of just building out our wholesale footprint, our retail footprint, and something like this happens and we're not structured or positioned to do well on the e-com side of things.
Yeah.
I just feel really fortunate and blessed that's how we decided to grow the business. And it's 99% of our sales now. And before COVID, it was 90%. We lost 10% of our business whenever COVID hit.
Oh, it's interesting to see how this pandemic has affected everyone. I know myself, like I made the majority of my income off of the live side of things. And oh, boy, that was an eye opener of like, you hear that saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And then when it's proven to you, you're like, oh, that saying exists for a reason. Okay.
Yeah, you got to diversify.
Right. I know you touched on this earlier. Baseball gave you all sorts of stuff when you were younger, and then you felt like baseball kind of took things from you once you got pro, right? Like, looking back, what is the one thing that you kind of valued the most coming up as a baseball player? What was the one thing baseball gave to you the most?
The two things that I miss the most now that I look back on and that I really, really appreciate is the camaraderie of things. So just the friendships that you create in a locker room environment and a dugout environment.
You probably still have friendships from back then, eh?
Yeah, probably not as good as I would hope they are, but you guys maybe relate that you kind of, life starts to happen and, yeah. and you kind of grow apart. But like my college roommate was my best man in my wedding, and he was also on the team. He was another pitcher. The competitiveness of things. I really miss competing. Business is fun, and it's there's a different type of pressure that comes along with it. But as far as just like being on a mound and pitching and competing in that and with teammates and winning like nail biter games,
yeah,
it's just so tough to replicate that. Once baseball's gone. So I would say those are the two things that I probably miss the most about baseball.
Randall, thank you so much for your time, my man. I really do appreciate it. I know for our listeners out there who are looking for a dugout mug, you've got, if you can go ahead and give your little spiel here, you've got all of the teams. Where do they go online to get them and so on and so forth?
Yeah, dugoutmugs.com. And then we're on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, it's all Dugout Mugs. You can just search Dugout Mugs and you can find us. And then I'm also personally on LinkedIn if anybody wants to connect.
Amazing. Thanks again, brother. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah. Pleasure is mine. I appreciate you guys helping us spread the word. And, if you guys don't have any Dugout Mugs, shoot me an email. We'll get a couple in your hands.
Amazing.
I guess.
All right. Thanks so much, Randall. Really do appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.